Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daniels, quick throw, far side, get it out there to McLaurin. Breaks through, Terry McLaurin, foot race, McLaurin is going to win! Touchdown, Washington!
Grant and Danny on The Fan. We're brought to you today and every day by the law firm Condori and Murad.
They can do so much for you. Like what? Great question. How about estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration, and more? Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
One of the most important commanders in 2026 will be Terry McLaurin. If he can have a big season and get open and make plays and turn 10 yards into 25 and first downs into touchdowns and run through some would-be tackles, all of a sudden, Daniels is playing better. This offense is cooking. You're scoring more points, and you're winning more games than people think. So there's a lot of pressure on him to get back to his old ways. Last year was kind of a disaster. You had the contract dispute with the team and then all the injuries, and it felt like everything that could go wrong did go wrong. But prior to that, he had become one of the better receivers in the league, a fringe All-Pro, second-team All-Pro in 2024, 80-plus catches for 1,100 yards and 13 touchdowns. And, Danny, that doesn't even count the three more touchdowns he caught in the postseason as well, when he was marvelous as the Commanders got to the NFC Championship game. But believe it or not, it's now year 8 for Terry McLaurin, who turns 31 years old in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you know generally how this organization feels, apparently, about the receivers over 30. They don't love paying those guys. And we went through a knockdown, drag-out fight that was the story of the offseason, the story of training camp, the story of, frankly, the year. And, you know, the worry was you don't have enough time to get into football shape. Soft tissue injuries occur. What's that? Soft tissue injuries occurred and were persistent throughout his year. That seemed sabotage and doom from the beginning. This is a different year, though, and you're pretty much generally banking between 75 and 82, 83 catches, just over 1,000 yards and around, you know, 5-6 touchdowns. The massive spike in touchdowns was the aberration. Everything else was kind of similar to what he'd done, but you could set your watch to it.
Everything that can look and feel better does as far as McLaurin at training camp. He's his old self again. He's smiling. He's happy. He's running the receiver room. He's having a great camp. There's just no way this season doesn't go better. The prep, everything leading up to it, it's night and day from a year ago. So I'm really excited about that for him. But it was cool to catch up with him today and reminisce a little bit about the journey he's been on and the year ahead in a new offense with David Blau. He's actually going to be moved around. The defense isn't always going to know what side of the formation he lines up on. We covered that as well. He's got a new special, terrific player in the receiver room with him who is going to do more to take pressure off of him and avoid double team situations for him than has probably ever happened in his career with Stephon Diggs coming in. So here was that conversation. It began with him talking about being here for three regimes, a name change, an ownership change, and just having experienced so much with this organization.
It's definitely a part of my story and my journey here. You know, I try not to reflect too much of the past, but at the same time, I feel like everything I've been through here throughout my career has put me in the situation I am today, the person I am today, the leader, the player, and the experience that I have. So it's just really a blessing to be at the same place that drafted me 8 years ago. It's very rare to not only be playing this long in the league, but to be playing at the same place I drafted you. So no matter who's been in the building, players or coaches, I just try to always be consistent and exude who I am.
How does this compare? I'm talking from the very top. Like, the ownership situation is so good, and the front office with Adam is very comfortable now with Dan. Yeah. Compared to some of these other years, it just seems like the vibes are trending in the right direction around here.
Yeah, I think there's definitely synergy, which is important if you want to have long-term success. And so when everybody's on the same page, it definitely trickles down. And so to have
this season where everybody's been in the building, the consistency's been there, and it's just been pretty normal. Although we've installed a new offense and a new defense, guys have just taken it in stride. But, you know, I'm just really proud of our development so far, but we still have some time to go before we get ready for the first game. So, you know, we're looking forward to compete against a really good team tomorrow in the joint practice. And it's just another chance to compete. You know, I wouldn't call it a measuring stick or anything like that, but that's a physical program. They pride themselves on that. But we're looking forward to the challenge and just to be out there and play the game at a high level.
Terry McLaurin on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. What's your take? Everyone kind of has their opinion, it seems like, on joint practices versus preseason games.
Yeah.
Looks like you'll end up getting like three snaps without a target.
Right.
But you got the work against Miami, which was two grueling hours, and then you've got tomorrow.
Right.
How does that work in replacing what used to be? The old guys will tell you we played four preseason games for a quarter or two.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just figuring out what works best for your team. So we kind of just trust DQ and the plan that they have for us. So whether that's preseason games, we're going to be ready for that. With it being two joint practice, we're ready for that too. So as a competitor, I'm just looking to anytime my number's called to be out there is just go compete. That's what I do. So more importantly, though, I think you know, preseason game is more like a game-like atmosphere. You know, you do pregame warm-up, you get in and out of the huddle, on and off the sideline, and practice is a little slower of a tempo, but it's a lot more crisp and precise because the periods are scheduled and you know what's kind of coming up. And so I prefer both because you genuinely get two different experiences. But with us only playing, you know, three snaps, I mean, for myself personally, I play a lot of football, so I have no worry about being ready for the season. But when you get a chance to go against a physical team like Baltimore, who's had success, have great players on both sides of the football, it can almost play out like a game. You know what I mean? You just never know how the joint practices are going to go. Hopefully everybody stays clean and healthy. But when you're going against a competitive program, you got to bring your juice too. And the great thing about it is we're a competitive program too. So I'm looking forward to competing against their corners, their safeties, is just everybody kind of just bringing that energy. I think that's what really showed up against Miami, just our energy. I think it started at one-on-one. So if we have one-on-ones tomorrow, I think that's a chance for us to kind of set the tone for the practice.
I'm so excited for Blau's offense.
Yeah.
Watching how you guys move around and 17's in different locations and no one knows where he's going to be.
Right.
It made me look bad in 24 because I don't like the stagnant thing.
Yeah.
And I always said that's like the worst thing you could do for a wide receiver one. Mm-hmm. But then you ended up having this career year and balled out. So there's ways to make it work in Cliff style too. But out here, what have you felt as differences? What do you like about what Blau's doing?
You know, to your point, I did have success in that offense. And I think as a receiver, like, if you want to be successful in this league, you got to be able to produce no matter what your circumstances are, no matter what the offense, the quarterback, whatever it is. And so I've tried to always keep that mentality in mind. But also, it's refreshing to be able to move around a lot. You know what I mean? When you turn on the tape, and you don't know where the number one receiver is going to be, it just forces the defense to have to prepare for the whole field versus 95% of the time they know I'm going to be on the left. So it allows the defensive coordinator to set the defense to the, you know, whether it's a cloud, whether it's an in-and-out coverage, or even a DB. Like, it just forces him to be able to not have to worry about as many splits and motions to worry about. Like, if I'm plus two, he kind of knows what I'm doing. If I'm on the numbers, et cetera, et cetera. You close the margin for error for myself because you kind of got to just iso ball. I call it like hard and iso ball. But if you're a receiver, you gotta win. So.
Hard and iso ball is funny.
Yeah.
Do you – it maybe doesn't work as hurt you as much because you feel good about beating man.
Right.
But, like, are there more free releases and stacks and stuff here?
100%. And I think kind of where we're at now is, you know, I'm at number one. I'm number two. I'm in a bunch. I'm in a stack. I'm motioning out. I'm motioning in. There's just so many other things that defense have to prepare for. And then the thing is like, we could all do each other's jobs. I think that's the culmination of this offense. Like, he's always said, make the same things look different and the different things look the same. To me, that means just there's going to be a marrying of our plays from the run game to the pass game to the way we set up our routes and the certain stems and kind of making defenses presenting the picture of it's the same play, but it could be something completely different. And as a receiver, that's great for myself because you know how to beat man, you know how to win, but if you're getting like
set looks in the offense where you know, hey, we're driving out this deep defender because you're coming in on a dagger, or we're clearing out the top part of the coverage, you have a shallow. Like, those are easy looks, and it just allows you to kind of just get touches within the flow of the offense versus I got to beat this guy game in, game out, play in, play out. So I think that's super exciting just to be a part of an offense like that where Blau is so innovative, and you have a quarterback like Jaden who's able to get us in the right plays. You know, I think they given him the freedom to, if he sees a certain look, to get us something that beats man, get us something that beats zone, which for a smart quarterback like that, that only accentuates your offense more.
Right.
And so I think we're seeing that as we get through the deeper parts of this preseason, and now we just have to show that tomorrow and then going into week one.
Terry McLaurin with us on 106.7 The Fan. I asked the coach on another team when you guys signed Diggs, like, what he thought of you guys together. He's like, he thinks you're the perfect complements.
Yeah.
A, what do you think of that assessment? And B, why do you think he would say that?
I think it's pretty accurate. You know, on the field, we're definitely a lot similar. We play with a grit and a passion that I just think is different. You know what I mean? It's almost like you have a mentality of a lineman or a D lineman where you're just ready to be physical and bring the fight to somebody. And you're just a relentless competitor. Like, you're going to have to guard this person for four quarters, every snap, and you're just not going to quit. And that eventually, like, weighs down on a defense and weighs down on your defender. And so when you add another guy to our group, not only it raises the floor, but it raises the ceiling. He's an unbelievable competitor. He's played at the highest level. He's played in the Super Bowl and been an All-Pro. So similar to my career as well. You know what I mean? And we're here together. And he's a lot more vocal. I'm maybe a little bit more reserved off the field. But on the field, like, he's vocal in that way. And I'm kind of just like a different style of leader where I'm see things need to be said, then I say them kind of thing. And I think that piggybacks off of one another in the way that we kind of just bring our personalities to life. And at the end of the day, like, I think it's just hard to guard two guys that you know who can win against man, who can win against zone. And then you put them on the same side, it's like you could cover underneath, but what happens deep? You can cover deep, but what happens underneath? I think it allows us to layer the field so much better when you have two guys that can play the slot, the outside, have vertical ability, and to win underneath. So it's been great having him here. I've definitely learned things from him. He's learned things from me. And I think it's going to be a really fun season with us together in the same room.
I'm sure every position group is pretty tight.
Mm-hmm.
But the wide receiver room this year, to me, I don't remember seeing a position group like that. Even at the end of camp here, you guys have a little powwow. And I've talked to guys like Traylon. He talks about, like, I know that I'm competing with a guy, and I might get cut or he might get cut. But I said, what if you guys signed Diggs? This was a couple weeks ago. He's like, I love him too. You
exactly.
know? Is that a you thing? Like, who gets credit for that? Like, how did the room come together like that?
I think it's a culmination, right? But being the leader of the room, I've always tried to introduce a very open environment. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I'm the only voice in that room. It's not what Terry says goes. It's not what Bobby says goes. It's not what Dre says goes. And I think I got to give credit to Bobby because he allows us to take ownership of the room. He coaches us. He's making sure we're on the details, but it's our room. And I said at the beginning of the camp, you know, all these guys, including myself, we're competing for a spot. We're competing for our position to be one of the best on the team. You know what I mean? I genuinely did believe that before we even added Diggs. And so when you add him, it just adds everybody's level, has to take a step up. And it's just really cool to be a part of a group where guys are so unselfish. I think it starts with unselfishness.
Yeah.
But also the competition that's in that room is extremely high. We're all happy for each other. Like, you go out there and we're making plays. I'm happy for Trey. I'm happy for Jaylen. I'm happy for Dayami. I could go down the list. You know what I mean? I think we're all trying to make a career and a living for our family. So there's no hating in our room. But it definitely starts with the leadership in that. And then the competition is what we do. I truly always believe, like, the receiver set the tone and the tempo for practice. When we're making plays, it gives the quarterbacks more confidence. They don't have to be as perfect. They know we can make plays whether the ball's perfect or not. And, you know, it's just been a fun room to be a part of. I think what's the most fun is we have great top-end talent, but we have unbelievable depth as well. We trust guys 1 through 7, however many we keep, that can go in there and make plays for us. And that's what makes it a really fun room, especially in an offense where, you know, Jaden's going to throw the ball around.
A couple of moments left with Terry McLaurin on 106.7 The Fan.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, like, just the demeanor, seeing you out here happy again.
Yeah.
That's not the, like, even at camp, it's business. You got to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that wasn't fun for you.
Yeah, right.
do you look back at last year with like a bad taste in your mouth, or did you already flush it because you've had six that weren't like it and one like that? Like, how do you view last year?
I just view it as a chapter in my story where, you know, everything doesn't necessarily go as you plan, and that's just life. But I leaned a lot on my faith during that time. You know, I had a lot of support in this building and outside of the building. So I know who I am and I know what I bring to the table. I think that's the great thing about, you know, growing as a human being and just learning from your experiences. And I just thank God that he allowed me to sustain myself going through all that, because it's not an easy process to go through. But at the same time, I'm extremely happy that the way they worked out, because this is where I want to be. So
had you had a year like that, like, even I'd imagine, not obviously as a pro, but high school, college, like ever, where it was just like, just felt like whatever could go wrong did?
Yeah, I mean, I've been through my share of adversity, you know, on and off the field. And what I've learned is you just got to continue to keep your eyes on God, to be honest. I try not to keep my eyes on my circumstances, because your circumstances change, but the Lord never changes. And so that's what really grounds me. And again, I'm just really comfortable in who I am as a person and a leader. And I know what I bring to the table. I know what I bring to this building. So, you know, the business sometimes doesn't always marry perfect together, but as long as you get on the same page, I mean, I think that's what's most important. Obviously, we both learned that we rather would have got it done sooner, but you know, I'm here and that's in the past. So I have no hard feelings about it. I've definitely moved on, and it's exciting to be in a new season where you can put that stuff behind you.
All right, last thing, looking ahead to this season then, do you set statistical goals for yourself? Because as a receiver, it's such a dependent position,
right?
You can't, like, if you don't get there, it might not be your fault. How do you kind of lay your season out in front of you before it starts?
Yeah, I think that, to your point, you know, I've kind of had like benchmarks in the past, you know, but again, I think the receiver is the most dependent position on the football field. And so, you know, I just try to go out there, and my first goal is just to try to stay healthy. You know what I mean? I think I've been doing a great job of just taking care of my body. As you get deeper in part of your career, you kind of have to, you know, it's still a Lamborghini, but you got to warm it up a little longer. So I get here a little earlier than I even did previously, get a good warm up in so I could come out here and start flying around. And so, you know, I just think that's really where I'm at.
Appreciate the time. Have a great season.
No, I appreciate you.
Terry McLaurin after practice today. Just a nice reminder of our sweet prince and why it's so easy to root for and like this guy. They just don't make many like him.
Yeah, it sounded like Terry again. You know what I mean? Last year when he was at the Eastern Motors, where your job's your credit, I was like, who's this guy that's kind of has an axe to grind? It doesn't
seem
as
Terry
fun.
Back.
Yeah, I know you're doing your thing, and I understand it. I'm not having fun. I don't like any part of this from the team side, your side, anybody. It's just, I would like that McLaurin guy that catches 78 balls for 1,050 yards and 7 touchdowns. I'd love that guy back. And he sounds like him again. That you could hear the zeal and kind of joy in his voice talking about what's possible for the receiving core.
Obviously, there were weeks that he missed, and there were plenty of weeks where he was playing through some things. But there were also games where he looked like Terry McLaurin last year. And for the most part, when he was healthy and they got him the football, he performed. I think about that 74-yard, 3-catch game against the Raiders where he had the 56-yard catch where he got tackled at the goal line. He actually got hurt in that game. Then he comes back over a month later. He missed about a month to play the Kansas City Chiefs. And I always talk about his two remarkable catches in that game as some of the highlights of his season. He caught a ball on the sideline that was just masterful. He got hurt doing that and missed time. But he caught the touchdown where he got both feet in. There are very few guys in the league that can, you know, toe tap like he can and keep his feet in bounds. That was really, really cool to see. The Broncos game when he came back, the overtime game where they lost by a point, 7 for 96 on 14 targets, one of his most effective, prolific games of the season. So there were plenty of times. He had a 51-yard catch against the Giants. He had a 56-yard catch against the Raiders where he looked like Terry, 40-yard grab against the Eagles in a game in December as well. But there were just fewer and farther between than normal. And you just hope that whatever happened last year was based on the horrendous offseason, the camp that never got off the ground,
yep,
and then he gets right back to how he'd been performing for all the years before that. He turns 31, by the way, September 15th.
Because with all the lead up, the slow start, and then the missing 4 weeks. So through 7 weeks of the season, he had 10 catches for just over 100 yards. That's four of those weeks, of course, inactive and injured, but 2 for 27 against the Giants, very pedestrian, not much doing against Green Bay because no one did anything against Green Bay, to your point. It just very little, and this was kind of the worst case scenario, the doomsday scenario of, well, here's what happens when you don't do anything in the offseason or training camp or whatever because you're in a contract dispute. This is the worst case. And it literally played out that way, to your point. So through the first, even go the 11 weeks of the season, he had played in four games, had missed seven, and hadn't had near the production we were used to as the season was coming apart right before our eyes, coming unglued during those horrendous losing streaks where the offense couldn't manage to barely get out of the huddle, let alone have any threat anywhere on the field. And it was just so awful because he couldn't do anything about it. And, you know, you want to wipe that clean. And sounds like this training camp and you know, preseason has sort of gone a long way towards that.
I want to open up the phones on McLaurin next, and you and I can chew on this as well. But let's open. Our coverage of Commanders training camp, which unofficially wrapped today, is brought to you by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. You just heard from Terry McLaurin on Grant and Danny. Wide receiver one for Washington, new offense that should be more McLaurin-friendly, and a quarterback who is another year further removed from getting into the league, seeing things, the game slowing down, but also ideally much healthier than he was last year. Could be a monster year for McLaurin. Question we're asking you guys at 800-636-1067 is, what is your expectation? Career year? More of the same from when he was really good for a long time before last year's unfortunate circumstances? Or do you think that, you know, this is a little bit more like last year where maybe he misses a little bit of time at 31? Maybe he's not playing at that 75 catch, 1,100 or so yard level. How do you see it, Danny?
I think this is his average season. I think he's so,
he basically
dependable.
Gets back to pre-last year.
I think he's him. So what has been kind of a hallmark, it's been good situation, bad situation, mostly bad. Worst situation, dire. No other offensive weapons. Some offensive weapons. A good week, a bad week. This is what he averages. 80 catches, about 1,090 yards, and 5.5 to 6 touchdowns. The 13 touchdown season is the aberration. Everything else was in line with his normal career averages. He's somewhere in between 12 and 14 yards per catch. This is him. This is who that guy is, which is, again, the ceiling isn't as high as some of the superstars. He's not going to ever put up a Puka Nacua or JSN type season. That's not the litmus test, though. He's also very rarely, when he plays, even last year, as much of the struggle happened, he didn't have a 100-yard game. Even with that, if you do extrapolate his numbers that he put up over a 17-week basis, he was right in line for the regular old Terry season of 80 catches, just over 1,000 yards, and a handful of touchdowns. That's who he is. So now with a different situation, I don't know that automatically his production is going to ramp up. I also don't think, given the situation, anything's going to tamp it down. Even with terrible offensive situations and bad OCs, bad quarterbacks, and everything under the sun, this is what Terry does.
So 7 years here for Terry McLaurin, and seeing what he was over all that time gives me an idea and an indication that he is probably exactly what we think he is. Like, there's enough sample, there's enough time over 7 years where I think that's probably about what he's going to be. I am leaving open the possibility, though, that McLaurin could have his best year, that he could actually have a monster season. It stands to reason that when you're a legitimate, credible starting wide receiver in this league, you're better when someone of your caliber is opposite you, right? Has he ever once had another wide receiver that attracts attention in the way Stephon Diggs does? Never.
No, right?
Has he ever once had another wide receiver that you cannot defend, you cannot double team, you cannot do some of the things to bracket him and cover him in the same way because Diggs is there? Because if you're paying that kind of attention to McLaurin, Diggs is going to eat you alive. I think they could actually come out early in the season too and feature Diggs. And so maybe it's not in September that Terry eats, but as the year goes on, what was the first call for David Blough with that tandem wide receivers, with that starting offense? The first call from David Blough was a choice route for Stephon Diggs that was meant to get him open. He bent it a little bit wide. It took a little too long developing out of a stack, and they end up getting pressured and have to do a throwaway to the running back in Detroit. But the first call was, let's get the ball in Diggs' hand on the choice route, let him win with some footwork. That was the first call, mm-hmm. by the way. So I think you could see a lot of Diggs early. I think that's going to take a little bit of pressure and heat off of Terry McLaurin. And I think, could be wrong, but I think the fact that you've got a credible wide receiver too means more man-on-man, one-on-one stuff for McLaurin than we've seen in a long time. If that's true, he's going to win a lot. because you know he makes contested catches.
Yes, he does.
He just beats guys. So I think that that's something to think about. The other thing is, and this is pass protection dependent, I would say, but is this scheme better for him? Like, I think it is. If you agree with me, then that's a reason he should be better. Is this quarterback play going to be better? Daniels in 24 was electric. Daniels last year, Mariota for much of last year, was not that. But I think Daniels, based on the camp I've seen him have, based on the practices, the joint practice against the Dolphins that I've seen, I actually think he's going to have a really, really good year if they can protect him. So all of that stuff said, why wouldn't Terry be able to go out there and go 80 for like 1150 or 1175?
Those are good cases. I mean, it just he's never struck me as, even when there's nothing else on that offense, the next best, to your point, the next best receiver he's played with is probably Curtis Samuel. No, thank you, to be honest with you. Samuel's fine, but he's more of a gimmick, more of a, you know, ironically, a Debo Samuel-like player. Where he's right. One part running back, one part, you know, flip it out to him in the flat, slot guy, whatever. So this is the best player he's ever played with at this position. He's never shared a receiving core with a Stephon Diggs. Even Stephon Diggs, at this stage of his career, is still infinitely better than anybody else he's ever had opposite him. He's just never struck me as that 150-target, high-volume guy. His career high for catches is 87. He's gone over 80 catches two out of his 8 years in the NFL. Just not who he's been,
but
even with different surroundings.
But does he have to catch 100 balls? Right? I mean,
no, he doesn't have to, but
his 17-game average, okay? So every 17 games, just to break it up into an NFL season,
mm-hmm.
79 catches for 1,100 yards and 7 touchdowns. If he plays 17 games in his career, 79, 1,100, 7 touchdowns. That's with bad receivers around him. That's with a lot of bad quarterback play and mediocre quarterback play and one really, really good quarterback season. It's not that crazy to say 10 more catches and 100 more yards or 150 more yards.
It's not.
That's not a big bump. That's like one more big game. That's a couple catches and a couple of losses potentially. And now it's 80 for 1,200, and he's having the type of year I'm talking about. I just don't think it's that big of a leap. The question, I guess, would be, does Diggs take a lot of targets away from him, catches away from him? Maybe. That's a thing. Also, is there something to be said? Do we think that the pass protection's so bad that it ends up really hurting the passing game down the field, where McLaurin now is averaging fewer yards per catch because they can't run some of the X receiver
right, is air yards per target. Or is there enough food at the table? In other words, are there enough pass attempts to go around? They want to run the ball and play some defense. Is that take something away, too, from any potential totals?
If Diggs eats and Chig is getting a lot of targets, I think that could definitely be something. Obviously, you need Daniels to stay healthy as well. Let's go to Shane in Fairfax. What kind of year are you anticipating from Terry McLaurin?
Commander Danny, Lieutenant Grant, how you guys doing today?
Good, buddy.
Hey, look, I'm with you, Lieutenant. I think he has a monster year. I think he's going to catch 100 balls. I think he's going to be like leading the league in, you know, the Triple Crown. I think this is his year. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, but I think it's his last year here, too. I think this is his farewell tier here as a commander. I don't think they're going to pay him what they're paying him now as he's getting older. But he's not had – you hit it on the head. Now, it depends on this offense is now and this offensive line. Now, this offensive line is performing. It's looking like he's only going to catch 10 damn balls all damn year, but let's call it what it is. But, look, if the offensive line protects and does what it's supposed to do, Terry's going to have a monster year, and he deserves it. He is one of the best professionals in sports, and he's had nothing but crap around him. Now he's got that tight end. Now he's got a number two, and they can have a good slot, too. I mean, this team, on paper, can put up points. We'll see, but the question mark is still that left tackle, center position, and that O-line already starting.
Appreciate you, buddy. Well, to Shane's point, the cap number next year is almost $40 million. And this was always kind of set up where they could have a, you know, dead cap hit they could spread over a couple years after this season to not really have that kind of, you know, the albatross of his deal there. So you're probably right back where you were before last season in terms of, are we getting a new deal done? And we saw how that went for a guy that's over 30. Well, he'll be way over 30 by the time we kind of get to this point.
Yeah, there's also a post-June 1 release number that goes way down for him.
Yep.
Where it looks like 6.5 in dead money or something like that. But that having been said, I think he can determine whether this is the last year or not. I went on record when he got the extension that I thought it was probably a one-year extension, meaning this year, two more years with Washington, and then they have to reassess. And this is still a big storyline, but it depends. I mean, if he only plays in 11 games and deals with injuries and catches 51 balls for, you know, 579 yards or something, then it probably is his last season. If he goes out there in this offense and it fits like a glove and he and Daniels make sweet music and it's an 83 catch, 1,214 yard, 8 touchdown season, and I know at his age that seems unlikely, but yep. He was an older rookie, a little bit less tread on the tires.
Right.
It's not crazy to assume that could happen. Then why not bring him back? And maybe you have to restructure. Perhaps you lower that cap number. You probably should, honestly. And you extend him again or push some money or do a void year, like to spread out some of the dead money. I know they don't love to do that. But I'd have a really hard time paying him $42 million. I guess the good news is there aren't that many players that are due a whole lot of money from a cap number standpoint going into 2027. Whereas, like, the cap number for Terry, I think, is actually officially $34 million.
I misspoke. Sorry, I said 39. That's for 27. 34 is next year.
Yeah. $27 million for Adafe Owe is next on that list. But there aren't big cap numbers, really. I mean, I'm looking at Laremy Tunsil, 17. Javon Kinlaw is a huge number, 16.9. That's something you might want to do something with, depending on the year he has. Cosme, believe it or not, it's up to $20 million in cap number. But that's, like, the list. To their credit, I guess, by not making big splashes for a few years. And they're thinking about life when Jaden Daniels gets paid.
Sure.
They don't have a whole lot of huge cap numbers. So they could work with that if they needed to. But he's got to prove himself worthy of that, too. You don't mind paying Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase kind of money.
Oh, yeah.
If he's putting up 75-plus catches. Also, is Diggs back? Now, if Diggs walks, then it's all the more reason that you probably need to pay a receiver because he goes back to being the only guy in the room for that moment. Unless Antonio Williams comes on in a way where you feel like maybe he could take some of that pressure off. But just great to have that interview with him today and some time with him at camp. And I will say, after we chatted, he's just such a good dude. Like, we just sat there and talked for like 20 minutes.
Just a couple of pals chewing the fat.
Asking me about my kids and what grade they're in and stuff. He's just a really good human being.
100%.
Easy to root for.
Yeah, he was so awesome to have on the show for that season. I mean, they were 2 in a million. It didn't matter. Just he was so good every week to come on and hang out.
Such a pro.
Yep.
Our double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports on G&D.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up? Welcome back. Grant and Danny on the Fan. It is time for a double play. We are sponsored by FH Fur for 45 years. FH Fur has set the standard for premium comfort. Celebrate. Get 0% financing for 72 months on a qualifying new system purchase. Plus a premium EnviroAir IAQ 5-inch filter absolutely free. FH Fur plumbing, heating, air conditioning, and electrical, absolutely the best.
Bit of sad news for the double play today. Dolly Parton passed away at 80 years old. And, you know, for some folks like younger who have no file really other than, hey, this is a former country star who did some charity. People need to understand the life this incredible woman led. Born as the fourth of 12 children in a one-room shack in Eastern Tennessee.
That's a show, by the way.
I mean, just start off right there. Father could not read. Paid the doctor who delivered Dolly with like a sack of cornmeal. That's, I don't know if that's legend or true or what, but that's one of the things that has been said.
I was going to say that sounds like it's from like a bygone time and era, and it technically is because that was in the 40s.
That was, you know, the barter system, I guess, is still very much intact there. 11 Grammys, 25 country music number ones, and she wrote or performed or like was responsible for thousands, literally thousands of songs. The impact sort of beyond, obviously as a cultural phenomenon, did some acting, just sort of, again, has been relevant culturally for so many years, basically converted her, what could have been billions in fortune. I think at one point her net worth was valued in the hundreds of millions, so she was doing just fine. But the amusement parks like Dollywood and places, one of the more visited attractions near her home in Tennessee. But to me, the impact that I think is just the most incredible and is slept on is the literacy program, the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. Here's what you do. If you are a parent and you sign up, they send your child a book per month until that child goes to kindergarten. it was basically spawned because, again, her dad couldn't read, and it was unusual that she was able to even go to school, learn to read and write herself, to get out of there and go pursue her dream. But most people, you know, where she was from, couldn't do that. So they sent, I think I saw the number, 100+ million books they'd given out, just given out to children across the country over the course of the lifetime of the foundation. So she passed away, an unbelievable life, an unbelievable impact. One of the megastars, and someone that just did a whole bunch of good for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think we end up saying beloved as just a nice thing to say when somebody passes a lot. And that doesn't mean someone can't be very popular or well-liked or whatever. But to me, this is the definition of someone who was beloved. This is the epitome of someone who's beloved. When I heard that she had passed, right away I called my mom. And I know she loved Dolly Parton. And I'm like, did you hear Dolly Parton passed away? She had not heard that. She was very upset. But I could have called any one of, I didn't, but 7 to 10 people that I know of, mostly older females, aunts, great aunts, things like that. But you know, older folks that she meant a lot to and that would have had the same kind of reaction. I actually just put into AI. I said, why is Dolly Parton loved so much? And the answer it spit out was she combined legendary musical talent, massive philanthropic efforts, and an unpretentious, radically kind personality that bridges cultural and political divides. Perfectly
well put, actually.
I mean, that's why AI is kind of taking over. You know, that was a pretty quick response.
I'm annoyed that it's that good. That's profound.
But it's so true, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the musical talent, she has massive hits.
Yeah.
Jolene, I Will Always Love You.
The song that are covered by Whitney Houston that garnered, you know, that came back with The Bodyguard that garnered all the attention that, I don't want to say put Whitney Houston on the map. She'd already been a megastar in her own right, but that was the thing that launched her into the stratosphere. And Dolly Parton, All Quiet's like, yep, I did that back in 74.
I told you this on the show years ago. You won't remember, but Hard Candy Christmas, Dolly Parton, is one of my favorite Christmas songs because it's my mom's favorite Christmas song.
There you go.
It's what she always listens to getting ready for Christmas. So because of that, it's a nostalgic thing for me. Like, there were so many hits, so many bangers. And then the philanthropic stuff, you know, the scholarships and the books and the things you're talking about. And that's also true. Like, I've never met her. I don't know her. But I think if you were to say, like, who's this celebrity that everybody thinks is super kind and warm and just bridges all divides? She'd be very high on that list, on a short list, for sure. You don't hear stories otherwise about Dolly Parton.
100%. And it's amazing for someone who's been in the public eye for, what, 60 years, more than that? I mean, again, incredible the breadth of her career. A lot of folks have had some of the number one hits. A lot of folks have had some of the musical success. I did this, I did that. And then, you know, they sort of, now they're doing a podcast. Now they kind of fade into somewhere else. And she never left, just sort of continued to pursue those missions. And probably could have, you know, squeezed a couple more dollars or drops out of fandom. Or stardom, rather, and was so passionate and did so well with no off switch. You never heard that story like, yeah, as soon as the camera cut, she, you know, fired up a cigarette and, you know, was mean to some aide. That, like, never happened once in decades. Just, like, a beloved person.
It's time for my double play. So your boy got away, a little quick mini trip, was at Cape Charles, Eastern Shore of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
What's your file on Cape Charles and the Eastern Shore of Virginia?
So the only thing I know about it is that that's where your in-laws have a spot. Okay. It's kind of a mystery box to me.
Well, I think to everyone. So this is kind of the point I wanted to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
I was in line taking the kids to get ice cream at this ice cream shop they love.
And it closes so early, doesn't it?
Everything is open for like 9 minutes, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you have to get there between 1:34 and 1:39. Or 2:17 and 2:23. And if you could do that, you get the thing that you want.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, cute little town. I love the town, but nothing's ever open. But the ice cream place is the one OG that's like got the long hours and you can go there all hours of the day or whatever. So the kids are in line to get their ice cream cones. And this girl I went to high school with, who I'm good friends with, don't get to keep in touch with much anymore, but that I know was like standing in front of me in line. I could not believe that someone that I know
was also there
from my life was in this little beach town. Like in my mind, Danny, I could have been in Singapore and bumped into her. It was that random. We're technically still in the state of Virginia in Cape Charles, but it is Eastern Shore. You drive like 4 hours from DC to get there without traffic. And I'm in this little tiny town in this little tiny ice cream shop. And every now and then, like, listeners will come up while I'm there and be like, hey man, love the show. Or, hey, I was at this little concert in the park on Saturday night, and a guy who listens, who's from up here, came over, and he's like, hey, I just wanted to say I'm listening to the show every single day. I'm a P1. I might as well be in Texas.
That's
in my
crazy,
mind.
Isn't it?
It's like the craziest thing. But it's now becoming more and more prevalent for D.C., DMVers, Northern Virginians.
Well, it's
to
hard
like
to
go vacation there, basically.
It's hard to get to. So let me ask you this. Do you go down like you're going to Virginia Beach and come back up? Or do you go down like over and around like you're going to Southern Maryland and then just keep going?
Definitely not. You go to Virginia Beach, like through Norfolk, past ODU, all that stuff.
Yep.
And then you go through all the tunnels and across the 23-mile bridge.
And then the biggest bridge in human history.
Yeah, the Bay is technically, it's not what people refer to as the Bay Bridge around here, but that's what it is.
It probably should be. Because it's way more miles than that little old Nubs Bay Bridge east of here.
I remember doing a lot of research on it when I went across it the first time. I want to say it was built in like 65, 66. Mm. I could be making that up. But decades ago, and the idea that you could build a bridge in the water that is 20-plus miles long in the 60s is just insane to me.
Yeah.
But it is. It's the longest bridge in the world, and it just takes across the entire bay. But yeah, you go down, you're in Virginia Beach, so like the people that live in Cape Charles, which is this little beach town mm-hmm. that doesn't really have a whole lot. There's a Food Lion and a McDonald's or whatever, but there's these really nice little shops on their main street. Like for my in-laws that live there full-time, if you want to go to Trader Joe's or get your car fixed or get your hair cut or do a lot of that stuff, you're driving to Virginia Beach across that bridge. So it's like a 35-minute drive.
I see.
You could be there in, a half hour from leaving the house.
And I know you are a connoisseur of beaches, but what's the water like? Because that's bay water right there. That's bayside.
It is so fantastic for kids. Because
it's calm.
There's not big waves. And also there's like these shelves where they can walk out 75 yards and it's down to 3 feet. If you're at the right area of the bay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're in other areas, it could be a little bit deeper. But like my kids who are learning to swim and now can and like to putt around in the water all day, it's perfect because they can sit there and it comes up to their shoulders, or they can walk out far enough that they're like hopping up and down. But for the most part, you don't have to worry. You're just 50 feet from them, sitting in your chair watching them. And it is the perfect water for like a young family. That's what I love about it.
Nice.
But it's this well-kept secret. Everyone in Cape Charles will be very upset that I'm talking about it. I just thought it was so funny that every time I'm there, I see someone I know. And again, to me, it would be less weird if I was eating at a restaurant in Russia and I saw this girl from my high school than if I was in this ice cream line in Cape Charles.
Like, it's more practical that you'd be in Cape Charles, but I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
It's like, how are you here?
What do you know about this place? If not for my in-laws, I would have never heard of this
but
place.
But it's now a thing where it's like it's growing and it's now become a destination that people want.
It definitely is.
And the locals hate that because, like, we were here first. Please keep it this super charming town that closes down at 3:45.
They are not in on the... They need and want the tourism, I think, but they want the amount from like 15 years ago. They don't want the, now everyone comes here and it's the new Outer Banks or the new Topsail Island or something like that. G&D on the Fan. Next, our Beltway Blitz. Tell you about the teams in town you care the most about. Jam them all into one segment on the Fan.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.